Welcome to Ask the Tech Coach, brought to you by the TeacherCast Educational Network. If you are in charge of professional development and looking to build an innovative digital learning experience, this is the podcast for you. Join us each week as we uncover strategies that tech coaches are using to drive their digital transformations one classroom at a time. And now for your host, with over two decades of experience working with tech coaches and edtech companies from all around the world, Jeff Bradbury.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the TeacherCast Educational Network. My name is Jeff Bradbury. Thank you so much for joining us today and making TeacherCast your home for professional development. This is Ask the Tech Coach podcast, episode number 258. And today, we're going to start your day off with a smile. That's right. We're going to learn all about smile learning and how we can use the smile technique in our classrooms, in our coaches. And I have a fantastic guest on today. She is the author of a recent book that just came out from a great publication company called X Factor. And she's going to be talking all about how she is smiling with not only her instructional coaches, but in everything she does in education. So stick around. We have a fantastic show today. We, of course, have a lot of great things happening over on the TeacherCast Instructional Coaches Network. Almost 2,000 instructional coaches in our Facebook group. Hope you guys have a chance to check out everything over at askthetechcoach.com. Lots of blog posts, over 250 podcasts, and we are starting to put up some of our what they call a lead magnet, things that help you get onto our newsletter. So we just put up a brand new instructional course to help you teach students how to use spreadsheets. And we're going to be putting up our one soon of how you can help students use Google Slide animations. That was a popular one that we like to talk about, especially during ISTE time. So check out everything over at askthetechcoach.com. Lots of great stuff going on over there. And we want to have you guys be a part of the TeacherCast Educational Network. My guest today is the author of a brand new book called Smile Learning from X Factor. I want to bring on today my good friend, Miss Laurie Guion. Laurie, how are you today? Welcome to Ask the Tech Coach.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy that you're here. First of all, congratulations on all the success. Congratulations on the book. Talk to us a little bit about yourself. Who is Laurie Guion?
Yeah, so I am a tech coach by day, but I also do a lot of teaching and training. Anything to do with technology in the classroom is really kind of my jam, the things that I get excited about. You know, as far as my background goes, I've been in education about 17 years. It was a third career for me. I worked in the insurance world first and trained agents on how to do everything to do that would happen in their agency. So I was teaching, you know, adults very early on in my career. And then I ran a daycare when my kids were small. And then finally, it was getting to the point where I realized if I wanted to try this teaching thing, it was now or never. And I was very fortunate to stumble into a long-term sub position my first year out. And it led to a permanent teaching position as a sixth grade teacher. And I quickly learned that the business world and the education world were completely different, and I thought I needed to bring in what I learned in the business world into the classroom. So that meant technology. You know, I worked in a paperless office, you know, for many years, and then I was handed a chalkboard and a stack of textbooks, and I was like, "This isn't going to work for me. I need to bring in some technology." So, you know, I kind of was one of those people that would ask for forgiveness instead of asking permission in the classroom, and I taught my students how to write essays by using the computational thinking and the engineering strategies that I had seen in the business world. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. That's my thing, you know, and I was able to write a book this past year, which was also very exciting.
Well, the book is called Smile Learning, Leveraging the Power of Educational Technology. And you talk about shining, motivating, inspiring, learning, and elephants.
Yeah. No.
Let's just start with that. What is smile learning?
Yeah. So when I was writing the book, getting the title was the hardest part for me. You know, it was Matt from X Factor who kind of said, you know, you have smile in your Twitter handle. You talk about smile and the things that you think are important. Why not use that as an acronym in your book? So that's kind of how it came about. But smile is thinking about when and why and how to use technology in the classroom, because a lot of times we start with learn the tool and then think how to apply it. But instead, I want to start with what do the students need and then see what technology is going to help support that. So I always say to use technology when it shines a light on students or it shines a light on something that can help the learning process. You use technology to motivate students. That's always a big question I get, especially with the tech coaching, is how do we motivate students? Well, technology in a lot of ways can be very motivating, but it could also help students see the potential that maybe they didn't realize was there. And then the I was inspired. So sometimes students don't realize that they're really good at something. Like I remember when I was in third or fourth grade, I had a teacher who told me I should do public speaking. And I took it as an insult as a young kid, because I thought she was saying like, stop talking in class, because I definitely got in trouble for talking too much in class. But really she was saying I was comfortable in front of people, and I was, you know, happy to talk to a crowd. And that really became something that I was, but I needed her to inspire me to realize it was something that I was good at to be able to do that. And then the L is learn, because I think as a tech coach or as a teacher, whatever your role is in education, you have to constantly learn. This, I would say the last 4 years, the learning has been, you know, pretty overwhelming for a lot of teachers and a lot of us in the classroom. But I do think that it's important for us to be lifelong learners so we can teach our students to be that as well. And then the E, I know elephant sounds really weird. I've always collected elephants my entire life. I love them. I could talk about them for hours. But the reason that elephants is there is you want to think about those obstacles, right? The elephant in the room, and think about how you want to overcome that. And sometimes you have to learn to live in harmony with those elephants. You can't get past it. You have, you know, tests you have to give, or you have students that need support in a moment that maybe changes your lesson. So whatever it happens to be, you have to think about how technology can either support what you need to do to overcome or support what you need to live in harmony with whatever's happening in your class.
Well, I love the acronym, and I love that the book is also there. I've been having a chance over the last few days to flip through it and take a look through it. Of course, it's available through X Factor. We're going to make sure that we have all the links and stuff over on our show notes. This is Ask the Tech Coach podcast, episode number 258. And I got to just ask you off the top here, Laura, throughout the process of writing this book and your time as an instructional coach, what have you learned that you've been able to turnkey that to other instructional coaches? What's the one thing maybe that surprised you that kind of just sticks out? What's the one thing out of this book that you're able to turnkey to other tech coaches to really, you know, give them that shine?
Yeah, you know, honestly, for me, I wrote the outline first for the book, and I thought I would start at the top and work my way through the outline, but I learned that I don't work that way. I would sit down to start to write, and I would pluck something in the middle of the outline and start writing from there. I don't write in a linear fashion, and while that doesn't seem like something, I don't know, maybe it is less unusual than I realized, but for me, it kind of made me think that sometimes students do the same thing, right? They'll start somewhere, but it may not be where you expect them to start, and where their end goal might actually be at the beginning. And you think about that in the writing process, and you're thinking about that as a student writes an essay. We always start with kind of that strong thesis statement and then build from there. I certainly did that when I was in the class. But I think sometimes you have to look at what's your objective? What do you want them to learn from it? And then build from there versus starting at the top or starting at the beginning. And I think that with technology, when you're integrating this or when you're coaching either other tech coaches or you're coaching teachers in the classroom, you really have to think about the fact that everybody's process is different, and where they start and where they end could be vastly different than what you expected. But you have to embrace that process, I think, whatever the process might be.
But that is the instructional coaching position, right? You go to work every day with a calendar of things that you have to accomplish, but you walk down the hallway and you get constantly pulled in different directions, and you have to be flexible. You have to have a schedule where things are going to be able to move at any point in time.
I agree. Yeah. I remember one of the first years I was a tech coach for a while in the district that I had taught in. And I remember sitting down with a social studies teacher and helping him through a lesson that he wanted to do in his class that used, I can't remember what it was. It was whatever the program was, he was very uncomfortable with it. And so he asked me to just be in the class with him while the students were learning it. And something just didn't work right. I don't remember if the Wi-Fi dropped or whatever it was. And I remember him looking at me afterwards as we were kind of debriefing how it went. And he said, that's the moment when I would put away technology. As soon as it doesn't work, I shut down. I can't get past that point. And he's like, that's why I wanted you in, because I wanted you to deal with whatever the technology wouldn't do in that moment. And I think that's true. A lot of times, it's not that we fear using the technology. We fear what's going to happen if it doesn't work the way you expect it to. I mean, I'm sure you have, you know, situations like that as well, right?
There's a lot of situations where you're trying to accomplish something on your goals. You might move the chess piece in a certain direction, and the teacher's like, I'm not comfortable. I'm not ready to go. Not here. And then you have that opportunity to say, okay, let's course correct, or maybe we'll try this again tomorrow. Maybe I'll retreat a little bit. It's always working with teachers wherever they are, right? And it's not just working with teachers where they are, but it's also working with teachers where their students are. You know, even last week we did an episode all about building relationships and the importance of building relationships. And no matter what, it just comes down to finding people at whatever level they are and trying to figure out where things are. I find a lot of tech coaches go into a room, or you know, reading coaches, whatever, go into a room with their own agendas, and they try to stick with their agendas because that's the agenda that they're given to have by their uppers. Yeah. And it doesn't always work. It always has some kind of a frictional component to that. You got to be able to read the room, and that's not always easy.
No, and I agree. Like, you have to be flexible. You have to be able to shift. And I think, you know, I definitely think I frighten teachers sometimes in the class because they'll invite me into teach the tool. And I remember this one occasion I went into this class, and I do this a lot, that I went in and I told the students, I helped them log in. Like, that part I'll help with, right? Because it's first time you're logging into something, there could be like 15 clicks to get them in, right? That's my biggest pet peeve sometimes with technology, is how many clicks it takes. So next time you are teaching a new tool, think how many times the students have to click something to get where you need them to be. We want to streamline that process as much as we can. But after we get them in, I'll tell the students, explore. And I just stand back and let the magic happen, right? And the teacher's like, well, you have to give them direct instruction. No, when they're learning something like this, let's let them play with it. Let's let them explore it. Let's let them try all the buttons. And I guarantee that by the end of that time that I'm with the students, they figured it out. And they also probably have taught me something that I didn't realize because they clicked something in a way that I didn't expect, you know? So it's a great way to learn new tools.
That's scary. You know, I'm working as an instructional coach for the last 12 years. Currently, I'm working in middle school technology. And the other day, I found myself trying to explain to somebody how my grading policy works. And I just ended up saying, well, you know, my grading policy is skill-based. Sure. Yours is going to look completely different than mine. And because of that, you know, I can grade 30 kids worth of projects in 4 minutes because I'm looking at what they're working on. And because I'm looking at what they're working on, I can see all the different skills, and I can see that they've been pushing the buttons. And I can see that in order for it to be this particular way, they needed to go through all four or five or six steps. And for many teachers, they're looking at, you know, what is that rubric? And here's the, you know, because they're trying to understand it the way they're learning, and you're trying to teach it the way that students are learning. I think I'm saying that the right way. You need to come up with a way to allow them to push buttons. I mean, even right now in my own courses that I'm teaching, you know, we just got done doing an animations unit using Google Slides. And awesome. For 2 weeks, I don't want to say I didn't teach, but for at the beginning of every class, I did a 2 to 4 minute long, you know, I did my Ignite session with them essentially every day. Here's a new skill. Here's a new skill. Here's a new skill. And then I just sat back and I watched what they were working on. And then I tweaked them individually. And that was amazing. And every project was different. It's hard to have a rubric against that, right? In a traditional, you know, English science, like, you know, but you are meeting those ISTE digital learning standards. And now you and I are both... Yeah. ISTE community leaders. We're both, you know, absolutely, in the ISTE PLLs or PLCs. It's important that kids have those opportunities to smile while they're pushing all of those buttons. They have to find their elephants. How was that for a reference?
I love that. That was perfect. I just did a full day workshop called Bring Play Back into the Classroom. And so it didn't even mention technology at all in the title. And, you know, and I always hear from like the curriculum side of things, like, why are you doing this? This is more curriculum. It's like, well, you know, we have curriculum on the tech side, right? We have computer science standards. We have digital literacy standards, right? There's things that we work on. SEL is important to us. DEI is important to us. You know, we kind of, you know, technology is just a tool that's in our toolkit. And so I did this this workshop, and it was one of the first, actually, since COVID that I had a full room. It had been a while since we were starting to get people back, but people are starting to get interested in coming back to ed tech, or maybe there's more subs. I doubt it, but you know, that they're able to get out a little bit more. But it was a full room. And each time we did an activity, and I did the whole day this way, that we would do an activity, then I'd give them time to debrief as a group, and then we would debrief as a full group, and then I gave them time to think about how they can put their content into it. So backwards design in a way, but the idea was that, you know, what did it did the learning teach you? You know, what did the playing with whatever it was help you to be able to do? And then we talked about, and I hate calling it soft skills because I think they're the important skills, but we talked about the problem solving, the perseverance, the, you know, the grit that you need to be successful in anything. And we all talked about the student, and we all were talking about the grade level this happens to. We kind of settled on third grade. Somewhere in there, students won't do the next step without throwing their hand up and asking the teacher what it is that they're supposed to do next. And I think projects like yours, like what you were talking about with this project-based learning where everything's a little bit different, and you stand back and let them create, they learn that it's okay to try to figure it out for themselves. They learn that perseverance. And if you don't give them those opportunities, they're just going to be another cog in the wheel saying, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? And we don't want that. We want innovators. We want creative thinkers. We want students to realize that they can do whatever it is. And with the grading, like, yeah, skill-based is really great. I agree with that 100%. I think we have to think about our learning objective. Is your objective that they can name all, you know, 50 states in alphabetical order, or is it that they're going to learn something in the process, right? So what is it that you want the students to be able to do? But it shouldn't be, you know, I hate to say it, it shouldn't be just the content. There should be more around it. And I think I graded like you, like, you know, it might not be the perfect essay when they were done writing their, you know, how-to essays or whatever, but what did they do in the process that I can see that they've done growth, they've worked on the skills I need them to work on.
Well, it's interesting when you match what you just mentioned and what I just mentioned. You know, I'm now shifting from Google Slides animations into intro to spreadsheets. And I told them at the first time, like, this isn't the most sexiest thing in the world, right? Like, we're going from being creative and they're making, you know, we did a turkey animates into SpongeBob world. I mean, they did a whole bunch of stuff. And now we're going in a complete 180 and we're doing rows, columns, cells, range. And yeah, they went from pushing every single button to, I don't understand this stuff. And I'm like, that's amazing. It's the same kids. But I had an administrator come in. They're like, well, what standards are you trying to reach? And I said, well, I'm teaching the math standards. What do you mean? You don't teach a math class. Right. And I'm also teaching the science standards.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You don't teach science. Right. But I'm also teaching the English standards. What do you mean? And so I'm trying to condition those around me to go, in order to hit the science standards, they have to be able to use the tool. Yeah. I'm the class that teaches them how to use the tool. So that way the science teacher, so essentially I'm taking my instructional coaching background and saying, mm-hmm. even though I'm no longer in a position where I can walk into your classroom and teach the kids, I'm going to make sure that the kids know how to do this stuff because I'm actually doing all of my teacher to teacher instructional coaching in front of the kids in my own classroom. So I've been able to do all the instructional coaching stuff at a much deeper level, honestly, by removing the other teacher.
That's one way to look at it. Yeah. And I mean, you know,
but because now I can walk into that, to the science room and go, oh, your kids know how to do this. Let me show you real quick. As opposed to, I know nobody knows how to do it. Can I borrow 20 minutes of your time? And as somebody new to the district, it's nice because I can go, oh yeah, all 180 of our whatever kids, they know how to do that now.
Sure. And they understand it
differently. Right.
Yeah.
And I told all the kids when we started this lesson, the reason we're doing intro to spreadsheets is because I talked to all your science teachers and they said everybody needs to know how to collect, change, analyze, graph science data. So here we go. And so like the kids are starting to understand my methods for reasoning and the teachers are starting to understand. So like I'm building an instructional coaching wing without actually having the instructional coaching. And you know what? It's about relationships. It's going to take some time. It's a little bumpy right now, but it's about, and I just have to remind myself, smile, right? Find that elephant out there. I'm trying to come up with a trunk packing joke. Just hold on. It'll happen before the end of the podcast, everybody. I'm sorry, but it will happen before the end of the podcast. But, you know, having those goals, having those agendas, as we said, is important. I want to ask you a question about where you think instructional coaches are. And I'm only going to bring this up because, you know, you and I both have a lot of experience in this realm. We both work in instructional fields, both in and out of our current positions. I got to tell you, Laurie, I'm doing a lot of shows and I'm seeing a lot of Facebook posts that are very much the same. Yeah. Next year, I need a new job. Help.
Yeah.
Can we take a few minutes and address this here? Because I know there's a lot of coaches that are going to listen to this and they're going to go, that's me. I'm looking for a job. My job is downsizing. My district no longer has the budget, the board. Where in your world are you seeing a need for instructional coaches? How are you seeing coaches surviving in the next little bit, knowing that for many of them, this is like, they're looking for new positions. They're looking for new adventures. They're looking for new things to do. Where are you on this topic? What have you heard? What are you seeing?
Yeah. So I left the school district that I was in for the current position because they were downsizing my position. I was going back into the classroom and I didn't want to. I wanted to stay in the tech coaching world. Yeah. And fortunately a position opened up at the BOCES that I work at to do just that. But you're right. I do hear this a lot that there's a lot of tech coaches that are like, I don't know if I'm gonna have a job next year. I don't know if I'm gonna go back in the classroom or I'm gonna have to find something else. I see it on the vendor floors at conferences. You know, all of a sudden I'll see somebody I've been following on X or whatever you want to call it. I see them, then they're all of a sudden working for a tech company. I'm like, wait, you were this amazing tech coach. Why are you, going to the other side? Which, it's all great. I mean, I believe in the tech, companies that they go to, they pick good ones, but it's the losing them to be able to help with other teachers and with students in the classroom is a loss, And I think where those that are thinking about going to tech coaching, I think you have to sell yourself in a way. So I was a sixth grade teacher. And when I wanted to move into a tech coaching role, I wrote the position and I proposed it. And I said, I think this is something that our district could use. I had piloted a one-to-one iPad, initiative with my sixth grade team back in 2013. And to me, it was profoundly successful. I loved it. And so I wanted to continue the work as they were rolling the iPads out to other grade levels. So we ended up being a K-12 school, all iPad, which now they've shifted to Chromebooks. But when I was there, we were all iPads. And so when I went into interview for the job, I went with this, here's what I think we can do. And they saw the value in that. And I was very fortunate. I worked in a great school district that offered the ability, and this was before we had the sub shortage and all the other things we're dealing with, but they would give me half a day with every grade level to work with them. And I worked with the literacy coach. We did it together. And so they felt that we had done our job. Like the teachers were good. We were a very innovative school. The teachers were incredibly creative. So that's when they were like, okay, maybe it's time for you to go back to the classroom. But I think what we get right, we're good. They're all good now, right?
Wait a minute. Back that one up again. They let you do it for how long before they said, we don't need you anymore?
Three years.
Did
it for 3 years. Right.
Yeah. Because
they're good.
They're good. Like you didn't change teachers at all. Like you had a 0% turnover. I mean, like.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, we were, again, very innovative school. The teachers did really foster creativity in the classroom. And I think iPads lend themselves to that over Chromebooks in some ways. So I do think that they were right in some perspective, but there's always something new. There's always something more to kind of support. And many of the teachers now come to the training at BOCES. So I get to see them. They just came to one we did called the Human Intelligence Summit with ProSolve. They ran a whole session on play and computer science and artificial intelligence, which was fun. But I think for the teachers that to kind of go back to where can we find these jobs? BOCES in New York is a great place to look. So if you happen to be in New York, they're always looking for tech coaches. I know I hired two this year to work with me as a team. And I absolutely love having a team. We're able to bounce ideas off each other. They bring different perspectives. One of the people I work with was a library. She worked at the library. She's a multimedia specialist. So she brings literacy and really brings, like, she's able to tie books into computer science and really does these fun hands-on makerspace type of activities. And then the other gentleman that I hired, he comes from a background where he's really into nature. So he does this whole nature tech SEL kind of tie-in that has a different perspective. So I think you have to find those opportunities in other places sometimes. Teacher centers can be very helpful to at least start the presenting and workshops and that kind of thing. Check with whatever your state organization is. I work with NiceGate. I do a ton of training with them. So I think there's other opportunities. It's almost like you have to do it as a side gig to kind of build your repertoire. And then maybe, the position's opened up. But you're right. I don't know that a lot have stayed within the classroom setting. We have a EdTech cohort that we run out of my BOCES, we meet once a month, either virtual or in person. And the group has stayed pretty steady, but there's definitely a lot of conversations about where they're going next or what's happening. And certain departments, like one school in particular, they had four when we started this, 5 years ago, and they're down to one. And she's burned out, she's feeling pretty tired. So I think we have to think about it. Maybe as an administrator, we have to think about the importance of keeping these positions as well.
You mentioned, basically just growing your tribe. And that's how this podcast started. I was a coach in five buildings. I was the first coach in the district. Nobody really knew how to use me. And I needed to build my own tribe. Hence, Ask the Tech Coach. I just started bringing on coaches like yourself on. And next thing you know, this thing kind of grew around me and helped me become successful. And I was also laughing at you because, in that first position, I was there for 4 years. I finally got things to where the middle school level was working and kicking tail, and they gave me the, oh, we're good, we don't need you anymore. Yep. The following year was the pandemic. And I had teachers that were like reached out to me after I'd already been gone for 6 months. And they're like, yeah, we miss having you around because now we need a coach in this position. You never know where these things are going.
Pandemic changed everything, for sure.
Pandemic changed everything, right? And I think the nice thing about the pandemic is that it on one hand, look, it did shift things. Instead of a tech coach, right? Like I created the Ask the Tech Coach brand, but since the pandemic, tech coach isn't really the popular term. Instructional coach is there. Downsizing went technology coaches, upsizing went instructional reading coaches, math coaches. So I think the pandemic certainly did have a reason to have more instructional coaches out there. And even now, if you look at the job boards where I am, tech coach doesn't exist. They're looking for specifically reading, math, et cetera, which puts people like me in a disadvantage sometimes for these things. They don't exist.
Right. Yeah. And I get where you're going, what you're saying, because you don't see that. You might see innovation, but it's tied in with assessments and curriculum, right? It's never on its own. You have tech directors, but tech directors tend to work more on the hardware side and not as much in the what we do, the coaching in the classroom. I think that, I'd love for my title to have the word innovation in it. I think that makes a lot more sense than instructional technology programs, right? We're looking at what we can do in the class to kind of bridge that tech and content world, which I think is super important. And I think you kind of hit it too when you were talking about the spreadsheets, that we tend to silo education, but the tech part can totally break down that silo, right? I think that because it has to be in every class. We have in New York, we have computer science and digital fluency standards that as of September of this year, 2024, it needs to be in every class K-12. Every teacher is responsible for teaching computer science. And I can tell you that the vast majority are not prepared for it. And it's not lack of training it is lack of training, but it's lack of training from their teacher programs. They don't feel comfortable teaching computer science in the classroom. They also feel like they're content experts, especially at the high school level, right? They know world language, they know English, they know math, whatever it is, but they don't see that tie-in because it's not the lens that they have. And I think that the tech coaching or the instructional coaching, whatever you want to call it now, is even more important because of that. During the pandemic, between BOCES and NiceGate, I hosted over 300 webinars that first year. Yeah. And I did it because I knew the teachers needed the basics, the how to use Google Meet, how to use Google Slides, what is Google Classroom, all of those kind of content. We need to build the skill base, but we were doing that in an emergency situation. Now we need to say, okay, using Google Classroom, but let's make sure we're leveraging it in the right way, or using Google Classroom or Google Slides rather to do like you did stop motion animation, escape rooms, choice boards. Let's make sure that we're using it in a way that's really going to foster excitement for your students, keep them engaged, and also make sure that their learning is actually happening as well.
I hear this phrase from school districts and teachers, we're not going to do technology. We're going to focus on standards. And, as somebody who's working their way through their ISTE certs and it's kind of knee deep in this world here, that one hurts, right? Like, no, you can do both. Like you can do reading, and still teach them paragraph styles. Like, you can do that, right?
I agree. Yeah, I think it comes down to pedagogy. Like, I don't think it's taught, or maybe it's been forgotten. You know, I think that when we think about design thinking, inquiry-based learning, project-based learning, UDL, right? You're thinking about any of these good quality pedagogy platforms or you know, ways to teach. We don't think of that as far as we need to make sure we get through the content. But if you actually did like a feedback loop with your students and you think about what they learn in the moment, they will tell you that that direct instruction, they're zoning out, they're playing video games in their head, right? They play them often enough that they can do that. But if you give the students a chance to try things on their own, and they have to actually fire up more than just sitting and listening, they're using more of their senses, the learning is going to be deeper. I mean, there's research to back that the more senses that we engage, the stickier the learning, if you want to look at it that way, right? So why are we not using the technology if it helps with that engagement? It gets them on the floor doing something instead of sitting and staring at it, you know, the front of the room. Not to say that direct instruction doesn't have a place, because it does, but it shouldn't be the only way that we get the information to our students.
One of the things that I'm struggling with right now as a technology teacher with this coaching background is that I'm trying to push that needle a little bit in the classroom. I'm trying to give the kids, as you mentioned, those innovative technologies that are coming out.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the AI conversation.
I knew you were going there.
I'm actually finding that through my filtering system, mm-hmm. I'm blocking all of that stuff. And I feel horrible.
Okay.
Because number one, my teachers are not ready for that yet.
Okay.
Right. So on one hand, I can show them how to do something. For instance, I'll give you an example here. I'm showing them how to do Google Sheets pixel art, right? Mm-hmm. You push a one, this thing turns red. You push mm-hmm. a two, it turns blue. We've seen that done. That's how I'm getting my kids through the last couple of days. Let's do the not so sexy stuff. And now we're going to do the artistic stuff. Sure. The artistic stuff is going to go into an architecture project, actually, where they're going to take the outline of the school and they're going to draw it into Google Sheets. And we're going to build the school up. Long and short, as I'm teaching pixel art, which we've all seen, we all know, you know, other ed tech names and stuff out there that like to do all that stuff. I'm just sitting there saying to myself, well, now I'm actually teaching them how to create pixel art. I'm saying that in quotes, but how mm-hmm. they can write everything that they want to their friends, and other teachers are not going to understand what they're doing because the teachers are just going to see a blue square on a spreadsheet and think, oh, that's kind of cute. Not realizing that inside that blue square is a paragraph of things that we don't want kids to be talking about in school.
Right. See, I've had the, go ahead. Are you?
I don't know where I am with this one.
Okay, because you were going AI, you went to pixel art.
I went to pixel art first because, again, I don't want to teach ChatGPT. I don't want to teach Ask AI. I don't want to, because then in the other rooms, the science teachers, the math, they're not ready for that. Sure. So I was trying to do the, you know, by teaching them pixel art, the teachers aren't ready for that yet because they don't know what to look for. So why am I going to teach them artificial intelligence skills if the math teacher, science teacher, reading teacher are going to just look at that as copying and, you know, copying homework assignments and stuff like that. So how do we get around teaching new and innovative technologies as coaches when our staff is not ready for that?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's great that you teach pixel art and anything with spreadsheets. I have a spreadsheet I use for work that has a dashboard, which another tech coach taught me, and it has changed everything for me to understand the data of the information that's coming in. So I think it's great that you teach it, first of all. And pixel art is super fun. Kids love it. So definitely do that. But I'm going to give you an example with AI and why I think it does belong in the class, and that teachers, honestly, I think for me, I've had the opposite. They're afraid of it until they see it in action, and we talk about it. So I've been doing a lot of PD on AI. I actually have one coming up at my BOCES called the AI Fire Hose. It's a full day where we're just going to dive into everything AI from the student side, the teacher side, all of it. But I was in a world language class this past week. I was helping a seventh and eighth grade Spanish teacher. And this teacher, I will tell you, she's definitely like the first one to jump with the sharks, right? She's going to swim with the sharks, no problem. She's going to try the tech, does some really innovative things with her students. And she invited me in because she said, I just want you to help me like figure some things out. So she's like, I've got great students. This is the perfect opportunity for us to try things. So we jumped on to School AI, which is an AI program that you can create these spaces for students. And we created a space. It was one of the ones that they had featured. We didn't have to do any creation. It actually created it for us, where the students would visit a Spanish cafe and they had to practice ordering food in Spanish. So it's using a chatbot that the teacher had set up with very quick couple of little texts. We're not using ChatGPT, we're using School AI. So it's a structured, safer environment, right? There's no login for students. We're not worrying about students' privacy. It's just a place for them to practice. And what's neat is while the students were going and practicing how to say things in Spanish, they were asking other words of the teacher to help her out. I don't speak any language other than English, so I was learning a lot of language too. And on the other side, on the teacher side, on the dashboard, she could see the full conversations that the students were having. So then there's some safety there that we can check to make sure they're doing what's appropriate. But what was also neat is the AI summarized each of the students' conversations with the chatbot. So it would say, this student's really interested in learning about the culture of, you know, different parts of the world, or this student looks like they need a little attention, you know, like different things like that, that were really keeping the students engaged. They were all in on this assignment. They had a great time. So then we flipped it. And what we had the students do is they used Padlet. Padlet has AI built into it. So again, the teacher had already done a Padlet where the students wrote about, they're learning about the UN Sustainable Development Goals around water and clean sanitation. They've connected with a school in Honduras. They do fundraising to build our biosand filters to bring to Honduras because there's no clean water or sanitation in their schools or in their homes. So they're learning all of these other things that are outside of maybe a world language class, but they're learning about different cultures. So it's all ties in nicely. But on the Padlet, they had talked about what water meant to them. And then what we did is we used the Padlet I Can't Draw feature, which creates AI images, to create images to go along with their presentation. And then they're going to actually present on Padlet, because you can turn all of Padlet into a presentation with just the play button, which is amazing. And then the students are going to be presenting this to a global audience during the Global Student Showcase with the Digital Citizenship Institute, which I know you know Mary Alice Curran, mm-hmm. right? She's mm-hmm. a Connecticut resident as well. So they're able to do these different things with AI. It was a seamless part of what they were doing. And then we decided, all right, we're going to take it off screen. And this was super fun. The tech teacher in the building had built me a giant Jenga set with leftover lumber that he had in the class. So we put numbers on each of the blocks. So there were 60 blocks, right? And we set up Jenga, and she asked AI to create 60 questions about food that are in Spanish. And then the students had to answer the questions. So she had a list immediately in that moment. As the students pulled out the Jenga piece, they said whatever number was on their block. She read that question to them, and they had to answer in a full sentence back. And we were able to play Jenga. So I think it can be a seamless part of your classroom. I think teachers can handle, you know, and I don't think you can do all that with a teacher who's maybe just starting. She's definitely, you know, above the curve and had my support. But I do think that it's something that teachers can handle.
But that's making sure that your district is okay with that, right? Because sure. I've talked to a lot of district leaders that are fearful of this. I've talked to a lot of district leaders that are saying, well, we don't have an AI policy yet. And I'm trying to have these conversations at that administrative level, even when I was a district level administrator, going, you know, when you think AI, you're thinking ChatGPT. When I'm thinking AI, I'm thinking Padlet. I'm thinking Canva. I'm thinking remove the background. You know, there's a different, yes, those are both AI tools, but you can bring these things in to a conversation without saying, I'm going to redesign a 5-paragraph essay using ChatGPT and just copy, paste, and turn it in, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think there's a lot of coaches out there right now that are trying to put together those 1-hour workshops. You know, I'm trying right now to do like a faculty meeting or something like that, where mm-hmm. Let's take 20 minutes and introduce the topic. Let's see where the landscape is, right?
Well, I highly recommend if you have 20 minutes with the teacher, because I've done this in a lot of faculty meetings this year, is Magic School AI. That's the one I would start with. We have a very strict privacy rules in New York State, so we can't use tech tools unless they're on an approved list. And the approved list comes from having a contract between that vendor and our school for each individual one. So there are 700 school districts in New York State. Each of them has to have their own contract unless they're on state contract. So, you know, it does limit what we can have. Magic School AI is one of the ones we can. And Magic School AI, what I do is I show them what the platform looks like, and then I ask them to take the content they're using now to create a quiz. Or I had a kindergarten teacher who said, we need a clean them up song. So she used the song generator. And she used Red Hot Chili Peppers, Give It Away Now. And she changed it to Put It Away Now. And it wrote the lyrics that she was going to teach the students, right? So in 20 minutes, the teachers explored a new tool that was AI, found something valuable to use, and were able to implement it in their classroom. So that is, for me, the easiest entry point, because it's already, it has the prompts. They've already been engineered into these little boxes that you just click the box, fill out the blanks, and off you go. And this has been the easiest entry point. The teacher, like, I can use this, because it's going to give them, it's going to shorten their time. It's going to give them some time back to do what they need. On the flip side, I had a very deep conversation with some teachers that were wanting to grade essays using AI. And they tried ChatGPT. They tried Magic School. There was a third one they tried. I don't remember what it was. And each of them gave different answers, and they didn't agree with any of the way it graded the rubric. So there's still a human part you have to put in, that maybe it's not ready to do that fully. But at least what they said, what was good about it, was it gave them a guide. It said, these are the things that kind of came up. It gave better feedback than they would have given to the students that they can pull from. So even if it can't officially grade, you know, it at least can give them a foundation to maybe shorten some of that time.
I love what you just said about making sure that there's the privacy policy. I mean, in Connecticut, basically the rule is, if it's, this is a loose rule, but if it's in like a Learn platform or something like that, you're okay. You still need to make sure that your school district has the okay to go through and move all these different things. I wouldn't feel comfortable going in and doing a faculty meeting on an application my tech director knows nothing about.
Sure.
But as long as that privacy agreement is signed and sealed, you're good to go. Do you have a favorite AI tool? I'm saying that as I've been trying out Copilot and Designer, and what's your favorite AI tool to go to?
I guess it depends on what you want it to do, right? So if it's for teachers, Magic School AI is just my first go-to. I always go there first for the teacher side of things. They have a student dashboard that just came out. We've played around with it a little bit. I haven't had the opportunity to use it with students yet. So I would say it's probably great, but I haven't done that part yet. But this teacher side is spectacular. I love School AI for the student side. They do have some things that help teachers as well. Like, I was trying to come up with a game, and I popped it in a bunch of different ones to see like which one I liked. And School AI had some really cool ideas there. So I would say that one's really good. I love Padlet because it does simple things. The I Can't Draw has been really helpful. The way it creates the Padlets has been great. You can't beat Canva for, like you said, the removing the backgrounds. You can do it in video. You can do it in images. It has the ability to create images that are really good. We did try to see if we could make images that weren't appropriate for kids, and it did stop us, which was good. I like that. Padlet was a little bit more flexible with some of those terms. So even something as simple as a branded object, Canva won't give you a Lego style anything, because Lego is copyrighted. Padlet totally did. So, you know, there's differences there as well. But those are probably, if I was going to say, my top ones. I mean, there's others that are great. Curapod, Brisk, Diffit, all of those are really good tools. It's just I haven't used them as much with students or with other teachers.
Have you found an AI tool that does graphics that are something other than a square? I'm trying to find, you know, PowerPoint. I'm trying to find slide. And that's, I wouldn't say slide design, but, you know, for every podcast, for every blog post, we have to make a little featured image. It's usually 1280 by 720 or some version of.
Sure.
I'm having a hard time finding something that makes a nice thumbnail image for YouTube videos and something like that, because everything I'm finding is only squares.
Yeah, I do find that too. So I'll ask it to make it in a round, and then I'll remove the background. I've done that. I think there's a logo maker one. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but there is one that will help you make logos. I learned about it at TCEA, so I'd have to look back in my notes on that. That one's really good. But yeah, I haven't found one that says make it a, like, an image without the background on its own yet.
I guess that's something I honestly never thought about. I mean, I sat here as we were going through, I just a couple ideas here. I typed in a prompt that says, give me a picture of a bald eagle making a podcast in a classroom. And I've got four squares. And silly me, it never dawned on me to take that, put it into Canva, remove the background, and then now you've got a bigger image of something.
Yeah, that's so what I do.
You learn from these things.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes you have to do layers, and that can be really hard for some teachers too. Like, maybe that's a next level versus a base level to really modify images the way you want them to be. But, you know, you could have some fun with it. I will tell you that in the past year, putting the word elephant into an AI image generator has improved vastly. When I first did it, the tusks were always connected, or the trunk was an extra leg. It didn't know what to do. It just couldn't do it. It's gotten way better. I actually asked ChatGPT to make me a black and white elephant that looked like a robot as a coloring book page, and it created beautiful images. Like, if I wanted to make a coloring book of this elephant, I'd be all set. It was perfect.
I made a pop figure of all of the triplets in one box, and they love that. Unfortunately, it didn't say, like, for whatever reason, that, you know, the text translation didn't quite go on to what it needed to. But it, you know, create three pop figures. This one looks like this. This one's holding this. This one looks like this. And it did. And my kids had a good time with it. So, that's, you know, awesome. These things are working. These things are moving. We've certainly done a lot of shows over the last few weeks over on AskTheTechCoach.com of artificial intelligence for instructional coaches. So if you're out there listening and you'd like to learn more about this topic, please feel free to head on over to AskTheTechCoach.com. Lots of great stuff. We're doing a lot of AI topics and would love to have you featured on here. If you've been using artificial intelligence as a coach, please feel free to reach on out. At the bottom of AskTheTechCoach.com is a feedback form. We would love to have you featured on this show and love to learn a bit more about what you're doing in the classrooms. Lori, the book is called Smile Learning, Leveraging the Power of Educational Technology. Shine, motivate, inspire, learn, and yes, elephants. Congratulations on the book. We're going to make sure that we have all of the information over on our show notes. This again is Ask the Tech Coach podcast episode number 258. Lori, what's the website that we can go to learn more about the great work that you're doing?
SmileLearningEDU.com. So you can learn about the book, all the podcasts, all of my resources. So you want to learn more about AI, I put all my presentations out there for you to grab.
And for anybody that's in the New York area or going to be heading to ISTE this summer, what kind of things can we look forward to seeing you do in the future?
Yeah, I'll be at ISTE too. I'm doing a few playgrounds on that Monday, talking about bringing play back into the classroom, some computer science activities. And then, you know, if you're near New York or you want to come to New York, NiceGate happens the week before or the weekend before Thanksgiving. That's going to be a turning stone in New York. It's going to be a great activity or great event. It's always one of my favorites, if not my favorite, to go to. It's a great place to learn and definitely meet with other tech coaches because we all congregate there. So it'll be a fun time.
No matter where you are, it's about building relationships with your teachers, with your students, but most importantly, with other instructional coaches. Don't forget to head on over to AskTheTechCoach.com. You can fill out our form, join the Instructional Coaches Network, join our Facebook group, join over 2,000 instructional coaches all coming together each and every week. The Facebook group is amazing, and I want to say thank you to everybody out there who's in the group contributing each and every week. So that wraps up episode number 258 of Ask the Tech Coach. On behalf of Lori and everybody here at Teacher Cast. My name is Jeff Bradbury, reminding you guys to keep up the great work in your classrooms and continue sharing your passions with your students.
You've been listening to Ask the Tech Coach, hosted by Jeff Bradbury of the TeacherCast Educational Network. Please reach out to the show with all of your questions on Twitter at Ask the Tech Coach or online at www.askthetechcoach.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And please take a moment to write a review in the App Store.